So the discussion about verbal agreements, about whether verbal agreements are they're binding in halacha. If a person, you know, Reuven, agrees to sell something to Shimon, but they don't write it down, they don't make a kinyan, he just says, yes, I agree to sell you this table, and then Shimon comes back and finds that Reuven has sold it to somebody else. What is the halacha? So that is what I'd like to discuss tonight, what the status of a verbal agreement is in halacha, whether it's considered a real kinyan, whether it's really considered a form of acquiring something that I'm bound to what I say, or not. So just as a little bit of an introduction, the Gemara in Kiddushin quotes a story of some of the Amoraim that were trying to make some type of transaction, and they said that we didn't have any Edom there. We didn't have any witnesses. They made a Kenyan, but they didn't have any witnesses. So they said, do we need the witnesses? The Torah says, Al-Pishnei Edom. So the Pasuk says that you need two witnesses. So they said, they went to Rav Ashi, I believe. Rav Ashi, and they said to him, was our kinyan valid? We didn't have any witnesses there. So was it a valid kinyan without the witnesses, or do we still need witnesses? Do we need witnesses there? Or maybe we don't need witnesses because witnesses were just there to make sure everybody's telling the truth, but we trust each other, so therefore we don't need witnesses. So Rav Ashi answers him, Lo ivru sahadi el l'shakri. The only reason why the Torah says that you need to have witnesses present at whatever the Torah tells you, you need witnesses present, is for the purposes of people lying, and we're worried that people lie. But in this situation where you made a kinyan and you trust one another, you don't need witnesses. So the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, his comments on the Shulchan Aruch writes that from there you see that witnesses alone will not accomplish anything, and the witnesses are only there present at the time of a kinyan in certain situations to make sure everybody tells the truth. But in reality, if there were only witnesses with no formal act of kinyan, no formal act of acquiring, so then there would be no transfer of ownership, and it would not be a valid kinyan.
Could you define kinyan?
So that's a good question. Kinyan is... there are books written on this, but kinyan, quickly, kinyan is some halachic form of transaction.
It's an action.
Right. Usually an action. Yes. Kinyan is generally an action, and we'll get to that, whether that is an issue. But yeah, generally it's an action. You know, we have a Kinyan Hagba, lifting something up, a Kinyan Meshicha, pulling something. There are some that are not, that are quasi-actions, right? We have a Kinyan Chatzer, which is you can acquire something through your courtyard. So where's the action there? So the action probably is somebody putting something into my courtyard. If you put something into my courtyard, you put it in there, so now it's mine. Right?
Well, we're walking away, leaving it in.
No, you could stand next to it once you put it down. If you put it down in my courtyard, and you, in order to make a transaction, you need three things. In order to make a transaction, halacha, you need three things. You need das kona, which means you need the intentions of the one acquiring. You need das makna, which means the intentions of the one who's selling. And you need maisa kinyan. You need an act of kinyan, an act of acquiring. So kinyan chatzer is one of them. Well, kinyan chatzer is one of them. So the way to do the kinyan is that I put it down there. But you can only do it if I have intentions and you have intentions, and now putting it into the chatzer is enough of an action.
Right. If you want to get rid of something, putting it down in my property, and I don't have the intent of acquiring it, if you're giving me your garbage, that's not kinyan. Even though you're just leaving it in my, and you're performing the action,
okay,
and placing it down.
So right. So that's a good question. Whether you put something down in somebody else's courtyard without the person, you put something in my courtyard, am I acquiring it automatically?
Right.
Well, so that, right. So there was a story, I think I may have mentioned this last year, but there was a story that somebody told me that on Pesach, a certain newspaper sent out samples of cereal in the newspaper. You know, the little box of cereal connected to the newspaper, and it was on Pesach. And of course it was like, total or something, I don't know, some real chametz, chametz gummer, some wheaties, I don't know exactly what it was like 10 years ago or something, and there was, everybody comes home from Shul Pesach, they see their newspaper, which will remain nameless, and they see their newspaper there, and next to the newspaper is a box of wheaties. So what, are they over on Bal Yerah, Bal Yemaseh, that they own chametz on Pesach now, because it's in my chatzer, it's in my courtyard, it's in my driveway, right, it's on my stoop. So now I'm acquiring, so, right? But I don't want it.
Right.
So what, Evan, you're shaking your head.
No das
kone.
No
das kone. Right, there's no das kone, right? So, chatzer chatzer is a very interesting kinyan, because chatzer, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara exactly how chatzer works, right? And the Gemara basically says there are two ways for chatzer to learn. The Rishonim discusses at length in Bava Metzia. Is chatzer acquiring for me as an extension of my hand, or do we view chatzer as acquiring for me as a shliach, as a messenger? By men, the Rush seems to say by men it acquires as a shliach, and by women it works as a yad, it works as a hand. And for gittin purposes, it needs to work a little bit differently for women. The Gemara just says the difference between yad and shliach. Shliach, you don't need to be next to it. If it works mitam yad, so you need to be there next to it. If it works as a shliach, so I can send my shliach off to do anything for me, and he doesn't have enough to be there. I also probably need a higher level of das in order. If it works as a shlichus, I need to appoint it, right? So if it works as a shliach, however, we have a rule that I mentioned the Tumim Chamarev tonight. So there's a rule. Oh no, sorry, in Mishnayos tonight we mentioned there's a rule of zachen la'adam shlo b'fanav. There's a rule that if you find $100 bill on the floor. And you say, oh, I know Rabbi Sonniker will probably use $100 bill. Let me pick it up for him and I'll give it to him. Right? So I own that $100 bill. You're holding on to my $100 bill now. Right? Because Zachim Adam stole the fun of. You know that I would want it, and it's something that I would be happy for you to acquire for me, but I didn't tell you to pick it up. There was no Das Kone at the time of you picking it up. So how does it work? So it works as a shlichus. It's a big question whether it's the chia, which is a separate category, whether it works as a shliach. But basically, you're acting as my shliach, even though normally I need to appoint a shliach. You can't go and buy something for me at the store. Now, you can't walk into the supermarket on Pesach and buy some chametz for me and say, oh, look, I was your shliach. I bought you some chametz. You know, enjoy your fresh bread on Pesach. I don't want you to. You can't appoint somebody to do an act for you. You can't do an act for me unless I appoint you to do that act. So you can't be my shliach unless I tell you to go be my shliach. However, the Mishnah says, the Gemara elaborates, that there's a rule of zachen la'adam shlo b'fanav. If you know that I would like you to buy this bread for me, or you know that I would like you to do something for me, then I can basically assume that you would have made me your shliach had you been standing here, and therefore zachen la'adam shlo b'fanav, I can make this kinyan for you on your behalf, even though you're not here. But only if it's a good thing. If it's a bad thing, the Mishnah says, "Ein chavim la'adam shlo b'fanav." I can't do something that would be detrimental to you that you would not want unless you explicitly give me your permission, right? So, zachen la'adam shlo b'fanav. I could pick up $100 bills for you and say, "Well, I know you'll want it." But on Pesach, if there's chametz on the ground and I pick it up and I say I'm acquiring it from my neighbor, right, who I'm sure wants his Wheaties in the middle of Pesach. So in that case, that would be chavin la'adam shlo b'fanav. That would be detriment. He doesn't want that. That's hurting him. That's something negative for him. In that case, you cannot acquire something that would be negative unless he explicitly gives you his word and his permission to do so. So that's why in the case of the cereal in the chatzer, so even though a shliach, the chatzer can be kone for me even without my das, because a shliach can be kone through zachen, as zachen adam shlo b'fanav, unless it's not a zachia, unless it's not a zachus. If it's a chov, if it's something negative, like in the middle of Pesach, I don't want it, so it never becomes mine. Right? And then it's your Wheaties in my chatzer. Right? So that's why chatzer is a little bit of a funny kinyan, that it works like shlichus, it needs das, it doesn't need das, but it's a very interesting kinyan, chatzer. But that's chatzer.
Heading back to the topic of
verbal agreement, which has nothing to do with chatzer.
Right, nothing to do with chatzer. You're referring to any transaction that has none of the forms of kinyan involved.
Exactly. All we do is we agree on that I will sell you item A. And that's all. You don't have to give him money. You don't pick it up, you don't pull it, right? And I don't know if we'll have time tonight to talk about employment verbal agreements, which are really have very intricate details. I should mention, as we begin learning Choshen Mishpat, the laws of Choshen Mishpat are very, very detailed and intricate. So in no way are the topics that we cover and that we learn as this meant to be Psak Halacha. I'm not a Dayan. And every case in Choshen Mishpat needs to be dealt with in a very sensitive and specific way. Each case is detailed in its own details, and therefore what I, with the topics that we cover should not be used as a psak halacha. If somebody has a specific question, we can go to a Beis Din together. I'd like to try to cover the topic and, try to paint the whole picture and give us the whole picture. But even if we come out with a specific answer to a specific question, nobody should think that we're relying on that as a psak halacha. That is the bottom line. So that should just be noted for just as a way of hakdama. So this case, the verbal agreement, employment agreements, I was going to mention them at the end because there are very also a lot of extra details put in there, but I see the time is, always gets late on us, so we'll see if we get there tonight or if we get there at all. So yes, verbal agreements, no transaction, nothing, right? All that's happening is we agree. I agree to sell you something, or you agree to buy something. We agree on a price, and then I come back the next day and you want to change your price, right? Can you do that? Or you want to sell it to somebody else who offers you a better price? Can you do that? Or do you have to keep your word and sell it to me at the price that we agreed to? Right, that's basically what we're talking about. So there is a Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Mem Tesmid Aleph. The Gemara tells a story. Rav Kahana Yahavi Leizuzei Akisna. So Rav Kahana was buying some flax, some kisna, some, I think cotton or some sort, and he gave some money for it. Lesov Eiker Kisna. And then the item went up in price. It got more expensive. Right, the going rate, the market value of that item that he was trying to purchase went up in value. So Asala Kame de Rav, he came before Rav, and he wanted, Rav Kahana wanted to make sure that he can get the rest of it, but the other person didn't want to sell it to Rav Kahana for the price that they fixed, because now, when they're in the middle of their transaction, let's say he wanted to buy 100 pieces, so he paid him for 50, and he got the 50, and he took the 50 home, and now there's another 50 that they agreed upon. They agreed upon a price, and they agreed that Rav Kahana would buy them, but he hasn't paid for them yet. He hasn't done a Maisa Kinyan. He didn't do any form of act of Kinyan, which would be when it comes to Metalfalim, which are movable objects, which is either Hagbah, picking something up, Meshicha, which is pulling something. So he didn't do any of those. So Amar Lei, Rav answered, B'mai d'nikitas zuzei havlu, that which he gave you the money, so give him the items, meaning the 50 that he bought, so you have to give him the 50 that he paid for. But v'idach dvarim ninu. But the rest of them, that's just dvarim. You just made a verbal agreement. And dvarim ain't behem mishum v'chusrei amana. And the halacha is, Rav says, that when it comes to a verbal agreement, they're meaningless. Not only are they meaningless that it's not a full transaction, but there's not even ain't behem mishum v'chusrei amana. So what's v'chusrei amana? Mechusrei amana means there's not even a breach of trust here, right? Mechusrei amana means somebody who breaches his trust. But he says there's not even mechusrei amana here. There's nothing here. You didn't breach your trust. So the Gemara then explains that it's not so simple, right? According to Rav, verbal agreements are meaningless, right? You made part of I agreed to sell you 100 pieces. I sold you 50. You gave me $50 for those 50 pieces. There are still 50 pieces that we agreed upon selling, but I haven't given them to you and you haven't given me the money for them. Then the price of those pieces goes up, the price of that object goes up, and I want to back out of the deal. I'm losing money. I can go and sell this to somebody else now for more money. So the Gemara says, Rav says, you can back out for those 50 pieces because verbal agreements are meaningless. De'itmar, the Gemara then goes on to say, Dvarim, when you have a verbal agreement, Rav Amar ain't behem mishum v'chusrei amana. So Rav is consistent. This is the opinion of Rav. They asked Rav the question, and Rav answered the question based on his opinion that if you only have a verbal agreement to sell something, it's meaningless. You can retract your offer, you can retract your sale, and you're not even blamed for breaching any trust. Right? Nothing. However, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Yesh Mei Mishum Mechusrei Amana. Rabbi Yochanan says that it is a breach of trust, right? That if we agree on a price and we agree on a sale, and then the next day I want to go back on it, I am breaching trust. I am mechusrei. I am called a mechusrei amana, that I can no longer be trusted. And there's a question whether Beis Din, whether the court gets up and announces in front of many to say this person is a mechusrei amana, that he breached his trust. We can't trust him. That's a question whether they actually are machris, whether they actually announce that or not. But regardless, this person is called a mechusrei amana, maybe even called a rasha. The court, some quote that he's even called a rasha, referred to as somebody who's wicked. That's the machlokes between Rabbi and Rabbi Yochanan. Now, the Gemara then asks a question on Rav. The Gemara quotes the pasuk of Hin Tzedek. The pasuk in Vayikra that says Hin Tzedek, when it's talking about weights and measures, that says that you need to have Hin Tzedek, Hey Yud Nun Tzedek, that your weights should be correct, they should be real weights. So the pasuk says Hin Tzedek. So they ask on Rav, what does it mean Hin Tzedek? What does the pasuk mean when it says that you should have a Hin Tzedek? Mosne Tzedek, Avne Tzedek, Ephas Tzedek, Vehin Tzedek Yelachem. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Tzeis Yeschem Eretz Mitzrayim. Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, and Hin Tzedek means literally correct liquid measures, maybe. Yeah, liquid measures. But the Gemara wants to know, what does it mean Hin Tzedek? So the Halo Hin Bichlal Eifa Haya, right? Isn't it the same thing? Isn't that a very repetitive pasuk? You should have Eifa Tzedek, Hin Tzedek, Avne Tzedek, Mosne Tzedek, scales and stones and weights and weights. Eifas, Hin, what's the difference? So the art school, the way they explain it is that Eifas Tzedek is a correct dry measure, and Hin Tzedek is the correct liquid measure. So they explain that there are different measures, for one for dry and one for liquid. That's how the art school explains it. The Gemara, though, says it's the same thing, right? Both of them are talking about this. It says you should have good scales, good stones, good Hin, and good Eifa. So what is all of that? Aren't they all the same thing? So Elo Lomer Lecha, what it means is Shiehei Hin Shalcha Tzedek, that your yeses should be real yeses, v'lav shalcha tzedek, and your no's should really mean no, right? Your hein should be tzedek, that when you say yes, it should be a righteous yes, mean yes when you say yes, and when you say no, it should really mean no. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, so then there's a problem. Rav said that when we make a verbal agreement, it's meaningless. I can go back on it, I can retract, and it's not a breach of even of trust. And here we have a pasuk in the Torah, an Isser D'Oraisa, that tells me, the pasuk says, you need to stand by your word. When you say yes, it needs to mean yes. It needs to be a tzedek. It needs to be a yes of tzedek, a real real righteous yes, a real a correct yes. So what does Rav do with the pasuk? So the Gemara answers, Abaye answers for Rav, that hahu shelo yadaber echa v'peh v'echa v'leiv. That hein tzedek, he says, I agree, hein tzedek doesn't mean a weight. But what Hein Tzedek means, according to Rav, is that you shouldn't be Echad Pev Echad Velev. That you shouldn't be saying one thing while thinking something else. Specifically, in this context, in regard to business measures, that you shouldn't be thinking to yourself, I'm telling you that I'll sell it to you, but I really want to change my price. Right, that you shouldn't be echad bepeh telling you yes, I agree to buy this or to sell this, and then echad belev really with the intentions in my heart of thinking I really want to change this price, and when we come tomorrow at the closing, I'll really tell you I want another, you know, whatever, $10,000 to change the price. So that's how Abaye explains this pasuk. So there is a big discussion. First of all, just how we paskin. We do paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Most of the Rishonim, if not all the Rishonim that I found, the Rush, the Riff, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, everybody paskins like the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, that verbal agreements are mechusrei amana. That if you break a verbal agreement, you're breaching your trust. Right?
So, right.
What it definitely doesn't mean...
You have a bad name. That mean you have to do the transaction?
Oh, so what it definitely doesn't mean is that there was a transaction done. Right? What it definitely does not mean is that there was a transfer of ownership when we agreed to sell, to make a sale. That's for sure, right? Because if that was the case, right, and if the Gemara would have given me a case where, you know, Rav Kahana says, I sold him something and he already did Hagbah on all 100, but now it got more expensive, I want to go back on the sale, the answer would have been, too bad, right? Tough luck, right? because
he made
the kinyan ready. It's his. Now it's gone up. Yeah, his stock rose, but it's his stock, so it's too bad. You missed out. You sold it one day too early. And he would have said to him, sorry, nothing doing. But what he did say is, no, the question is only whether there's mechusar amana or not. Right? Mechusar amana means that you're viewed as somebody who is breaching his trust, which is a pretty heavy thing for the rabbis to possibly announce that this person is not a trustworthy person. Not certainly not something that we're looking to do.
No one was in business with him in the future. He's Russia, but this deal is.
But this deal, right?
Can Bateson force him to sell the other remaining 50 for the price initially stipulated?
No, I don't think so.
Why?
Because he doesn't have to. He's supposed to keep his word.
Okay.
But he doesn't have to.
Okay.
There's no, meaning, in the realm of real strict halacha in this business transaction, nothing's been done. Right? Maybe you could view it as, just throw an idea out there, but maybe you could view it as, you know, there are two different parts to this that we're looking at. On the one hand, we're looking at the business transaction, and then on the other hand, we're looking at the obligation on the person, on the seller. Right? When it comes to the business transaction, the verbal agreement has done nothing. Right? But when it comes to the seller himself, now there's an obligation sitting on the shoulders of the seller to keep his word, right? To keep his word, to follow through with the business transaction. But that doesn't actually affect the business transaction. The business transaction basically has not even started. We've agreed to a price, right? I told you I would sell it. You told me you would buy it, right? And if the price goes down, so the buyer will have the same claims as the seller did when the price went up. But nothing's been done yet. We've just agreed upon a price.
Okay.
And we've agreed to make the transaction, but nobody made the transaction hasn't started yet.
So
I don't think Bezin would be able to. I don't think so.
But
I don't
if there was a star, then obviously they can afford it.
If there was a star and there was a contract where they agreed to something, right, 100%. Although star doesn't work by metalcolin, but when if it was a star on, let's say, a house, yeah, that would be a completely separate case. But this is where there's no star. It's just Dvarim. Just
if you had aid him at the transaction, that would be irrelevant.
Probably. Right.
Because it's not that we don't believe.
Right, we agree. I agree with you yesterday, but I think so. Yeah.
So, if I understand, to get the transaction, we need intent from the buyer, intent from the seller, and some kind of action.
Action.
Now, does the action have to be the actual exchange of here's the dollar and here's the item, or can it be some other action of we shook hands?
Okay, that's a good question. That's a very good question.
Because I imagine the oral, they did shake hands. They said they did something.
No, let's say they just... No.
Just
verbal. Just
each other. They said...
I agree.
10 for this.
Good.
$10 for your 10 things. Turn around. And
sounds good.
And left.
Sounds good. I'll see you tomorrow with the money.
Maybe nodding is an act.
Okay.
Of course, the customer.
Oh, okay, mazel bracha. Okay, yeah, I was going to get to that.
Yeah,
no, so that is a question.
Even a secular sometimes they want, that's the deal.
Right, so that's a big question. There is a kinyan, which the Gemara refers to as situmta, right, which is called a situmta. A situmta means the normal way of acquiring this type of object. There's a normal way of acquiring this type of object in this place. Right, so the question is, how does that work? When we learned about the internet business on Shabbos, so that was a bit. We discussed that for a while about whether credit card is considered situmta, right? Because you buy everything online. The normal way, if not the only way, to acquire something online is with a credit card. So that's the normal way of acquiring. So is that considered a kinyan? So that's a good question. Right? What to talk about? So here too, there is a discussion about. See, this is even a stronger question, because when I buy something with a credit card, so there's a maisa, something was done, right? I had to swipe, or I had to put in my numbers in the computer and press enter and press accept. Something was done. There was an action, right? When it comes to this discussion where we have it, I'll see you tomorrow, I'll bring the money, good, I'll bring you the chicken, good. And we leave and we say, I'll meet you back here at 12 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So what was done? We agreed upon something. Right, so let's assume the agreement we pass on like Rabbi Yochanan. The agreement is a binding agreement to the degree that if you do not keep the agreement, you've breached the trust of the rabbis and of the Torah. Fine. So the question is, what if that's the normal way for this type of agreement to be made? For this type of sale, let's say everybody who sells chicken sells it through a verbal agreement, and then at a later date they deposit the money, right, and they bring the money. So would that be a valid sale if this is the normal way for them to make the sale through just speaking about it and agreeing upon it? So that's the machlokas. Whether a situmta requires, always needs a maisa, meaning even if it's a normal way to make a sale, you still need a maisa. That if there's a normal way for in America for us to make a sale, to finalize a sale, and it would not include an action, that would not be a valid situmta. Halachically, that would not be a binding transaction. On the other hand, that's the opinion of the Rush. On the other hand, the opinion of the Mordechai in Shabbos, he says, even anything, you don't need a maisa, you don't need an action. A situmta just means a normal way of acquiring something. If that normal way of acquiring something is without an action, then that is a valid sale, that's a valid transaction. And if the normal way of acquiring chickens were to be to agree upon a price and to agree to meet the next day and to say, good, sold, then that would be enough of a kinyan, according to the Mordechai, that it would be halachically binding, that it's already my, they're already my chickens. Right? There already would be, that would be a, already a transaction. So that's a machlokas, the Chazon Ish, Rav Avim Yishayahu Karelitz, who was a great gadol in Bnei Brak in the 20th century, 1900s. So he explains this machlokas, right? We have two opinions. This situmta, which is some type of normal, regular way of making a kinyan, whatever the way of the land is, that is a valid halachic kinyan. So whether that requires an action, or whether it would be enough even without an action, so he explains it as follows. A kinyan, a maisa kinyan, right? In the essence of a maisa kinyan is really a way to show gemiras das, which means that it's a way to really show that I agree to what were this transaction, right? And the way to express in the most concrete way to show that this we both agree to this is by doing something. If we do an action, and we have an act of transaction, it can be a symbolic act, but there's an act of the transaction which represents that I'm serious about this as a seller, you're serious about this as a buyer, and our das, we have a meeting of the minds, right, a gemiras das, that we completely agree with each other, and that's expressed through my picking this up, or my pulling this object. So that is what a maisa kinyan is all about. All a maisa kinyan is about concretizing the das makneh, the intentions of the seller, and the das kona, and the intentions of the buyer, and to make them meet in the middle through this maisa kinyan to show that they really mean what they're thinking. That's what a maisa kinyan is all about, because otherwise they're just thoughts. And the Gemara says, dvarim shebelev einam dvarim. Thoughts that you have in your heart, they're not valid. Right? If you make a kinyan and you say, but I'm thinking that I don't really want to do this, it doesn't matter. Right, what you're thinking doesn't matter. Dvarim shebelev einam dvarim. What you're thinking in your heart is meaningless. It's the act that really shows the true expression of, halachically, the act that's the most important. So when it comes to a maisa kinyan, you need a maisa kinyan, an act to show, to make this transaction, to really show the gemiras das that we're all really on board and really serious about this transaction. So the Chazon Ish explains that the question is, can you, if the normal way to make a transaction in this place is without an act, is that, halachically, is that enough of a proof, of a concrete proof that we agree upon this transaction? Or do we say that in halacha, if there's no act, then that does not represent a true expression of Gemiras Das, of where we really are showing that we both agree in a practical way what we're really thinking. So that's the way the Chazon Ish explains those two opinions when it comes to whether this type of transaction would be enough in a situmta. So there is the Ramar, Moshe Israelis, who is generally the Pesach Halacha that the Ashkenazim follow, that he has his comments printed in the Shulchan Aruch. So there is a contradiction when it comes to this question, whether the normal way of quote unquote acquiring something, whether it is sufficient as a transaction to say not only that you need to keep your word, right, but beyond that it would be a valid kinyan, that would actually be, right, transaction, that it transfers ownership, right? So there are two places. One in Yerideah, he talks about if you ask somebody to act as a mohel for your bris, and then can you change your mind? You have to keep you have to keep your word. I ask mohel, the first mohel that I see, I say, I have a baby, can you come be the mohel of my child? And he says, okay. And then you find somebody else you'd rather do it, right? Or you change your mind and you'd rather have somebody else do it. So can you change your mind or not? So the Rama writes that you shouldn't, but you can, right? Which means it's better not to because you gave your word, but it's not a kinyan, right? You're not bound to it halachically because it's not really a binding transaction because there's no action there, right? Which is a question. I assume the way I saw it quoted was that this is in the context of a situmta, whether this should be a valid verbal agreement because that was the normal way. How else do you hire a mohel, right? Yeah. You ask him to do it. There's no other way of doing it. That's the normal way of hiring a mohel. So that was one place. And another place, the Rama in his Chupas, he writes that it is a kinyan, that if it's the normal way of making a kinyan in that place, that even an agreement would be enough of an actual transaction. So there is a stira. Rav Moshe Sternbach, who is a Rav in Eretz Yisrael, who has a number of Sfarim out, he's in the Aida Chared, one of the, I think, part of the Aida Chared is in Meir Sharim. So Rav Sternbach, one of his tshuvas, he lived in South Africa, I believe, for some time. So he has a lot of contemporary tshuvas that he was asked when he was in South Africa. So one of the questions he was asked was about the Diamond District. And they said, you know, in the Diamond District, it's always mazel bracha. That's the way of the transaction. That was signified, agreed. They're yours, right? Because people didn't carry around their diamonds. People don't walk around their diamonds. So if they would walk around their diamonds, good. I can pick, after we agree on a price, then I can pick them up. They're mine. I now owe him money, but I pick them up. They're my diamonds. Or I can pull them. I could do something to them. I could do an act of kidding. But nobody carries around the bags of diamonds in the Diamond District. So what they say is mazel bracha. Right, that means stamped. Good. Agreed. So Rav Sternbach says, even though normally just agreeing, a verbal agreement, would not be sufficient as a binding halachic transaction, that it would actually represent a transfer of ownership, when it comes to the Diamond District, and that is the way that they you know, I guess, signify the end of a transaction, that is an agreed upon transaction, mazul bracha has the effect of a real binding transaction. That at that point there's a transfer of ownership of the diamonds that are now in your pocket, and now I owe you money for those diamonds. But that it to such a degree that if there's something, right, because you can explain it a little bit differently, that a verbal agreement is a little bit different than mazul bracha, right? If when we finish a transaction, we always say mazel bracha. So you could say that mazel bracha is more than just dvarim. Right? It's more than just talk. It's like, it's like a ma'aseh kinyan. Yeah, it's an extra, it's something extra. It's not just...
You normally wouldn't say that.
Right, you don't say it.
You say it only in disregard.
Exactly. To say yes, right? Similar to a handshake. Right, you mentioned the handshake before. So yeah, they do discuss, it is discussed in some of the tshuvas, they discuss a handshake. And when the Mishnah Berurah, when the Chafetz Chaim, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Pesach, when he discusses the different kinyanim that we do when we sell chametz, we do a whole bunch of kinyanim, a whole list of kinyanim to cover all the bases, to make sure that we want to make sure that each one is, you know, that we're covered, that something works on a Torah level. So one of the kinyanim that he mentions is a hanschlag, which is a handshake, right? Because a handshake was the normal way. It was the situmta. It was the normal way to signify a transaction. But that's better than words, because a handshake is a maisa, right? I'm doing something. I give you my hand and we shake hands. That's a maisa kinyan. That I can understand is a transaction. But to just talk and say, good, I agree, or sold, right? The discussion comes up at what are they called? The auction houses. At auction houses, whether there's the same thing. So I don't remember what the bottom line was. But I would imagine that at auction houses also sold, right? Maybe
the gavel,
right? Hitting the gavel is maybe the maisa. But even a sold, that's more of a... that's like mazel bracha. That it's, you're saying, done, right?
It's a declaration.
Agreed. Right, it's beyond just talking. It's beyond just verbally agreeing to something.
Also, but, that's the common core. So when you say it,
right, so right, so but that gets us to the right. If it's the normal way of making the transaction, so that's a machlokas, whether that would be enough. But if it's mazlu bracha, that it's beyond just the normal way. It can be a normal way that we can talk about it, we can discuss, and we can agree upon a price. But then there's other times where the normal way is to add in something extra, right, or to throw in an extra word of sold or mazlu bracha, right. Where there's something extra being said after we agree upon the price and after we agree to the transaction, so then already you can say that it's more than just a verbal agreement. Right? There it has a little bit more strength.
On the acts, does the act have to be something that's done mutually? For example, you make the sale for the chickens, $10 for 10 new chickens. You go home, you go and you kill 10 chickens because that's your job. You give them, you know, the chickens plucked and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
You've now done a very serious act. You prepare the chickens for this guy. Is that the act, or does the act have to be done between the two people as they're facing each other?
My shechting the chickens?
Yeah.
Or him?
Well, you come to a price. Now, the act is you go home and you.
Oh, okay.
Chickens. That's not the act of the transaction. The transaction is you giving over the chickens and he giving you money.
Him doing something for your chicken.
You so have to be done together.
But
because he's doing something.
Right.
He, by him preparing the chickens, he's taking a further loss.
Right. And therefore, when it comes, if there's a loss involved,
right,
there might be less room to back out. If I hire somebody to do something for me, and he starts doing something, he starts to work for me, and he's sending his own money, that he would incur a loss if I were to say no deal, so then that might be even more binding than in the normal circumstances of a verbal agreement. So in this case where you went home and started shechting all the chickens for me and cleaning them up for me, so there it might be more of a binding agreement that I may have to, even before the Maisa Kinyan, I may have to follow through with my words. Now, I don't know if those chickens are mine yet. Right? A Maisa Kinyan signifies the moment of where your object becomes mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when you bring me the chickens and I pull the chickens, or I pick up one of the chickens, now it's mine. Right, that's the Maisa Kinyan, it signifies that now it's mine. So your shechting the chickens is not making it mine. Right?
Okay, but it might bind you to come and give some.
Right, I may have more of a requirement now to follow through on our agreed upon price.
You may have more of a requirement.
Yeah, well, I may have to pay you back.
The guy who's killing the chicken because I'm.
Well, no, I may have to pay you back.
You may have
I think so. I think you would have to. Yeah, I think you would have to. If there's a loss involved, then, you know, that's already moving to employee contracts or employee agreements where I employ you to do something for me. Right? Because I'm not just buying the chickens, you're telling me I'm buying shech the chickens. So I'm not just buying the chickens from you, I'm also asking you to shech them to work for me.
Well, no, the loss is the fact that the chicken's going
to have
the chickens available.
Potentially, it could go bad, right. So it might depend if there's somebody else to buy them, if you can sell them.
It's not like a diamond where we retain its intrinsic value.
Right. Right. So it might depend. That case might depend on whether you'll be able to sell those chickens.
You could also sustain a loss, though, if you come to an agreement on a price and then you agree to sell, but then the guy backs out, and all of a sudden now the diamonds are worth $10 less the next day. Now
mm-hmm.
you sustain the loss on that also. So does that give you a stronger argument for the amount put you in the same position as you would have been in had you agreed to the sale? You sustain a loss then.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
But then
the
next day it could go back up.
Right, so that's harder to say.
Right,
that's hard to say. In the case of the chickens, there's a...
You know you've lost the
right,
valuable.
Right, if you can't find somebody to buy them soon after you shack them, you're done. Right, unless, of course, now that we have refrigerators, I assume you keep them a little bit longer. But that in time when they were buying them straight from the, you know, 10 chickens, or so that would be probably more of a, I think so, yeah, I think it would be more of a problem in that case. There is a whole discussion, as it usually goes here, we never get to finish what we're talking about, but there is a whole discussion about, so I don't want to do this in 2 weeks, I want to just do this 1 week, I don't know, I want to do this again next week, but there is a whole discussion about whether the violation, in your case, just it should be mentioned in that case, regardless of whether there's more of an obligation to follow through or not, if I were to back out of the agreed upon price and 10 chickens or whatever it is, I'm still violating my breach of trust. Right? And the same goes for, you know, we discussed whether it's a situmta, is it considered the normal way of the land to make a kinyan, to make a transaction. Regardless of whether it is or not, I still have that same level of requirement of keeping my word, and if I back out, I'm still breaking my, there's a breach in trust. Right? There's, we would still call me a mechusar amana if I don't follow through on my word. So while there's a question as to whether it's binding as a transaction, whether it's really considered a real transaction that it becomes mine already, yours, mine, whatever, already, when we agree and we say mazel u'bracha, regardless, I still have to follow through because of the pasuk says hin tzedek, right? The halacha is that if you break your word, we pass him like Rabbi Yochanan, that it is a situation of mechusar amana, that you lose your trust, you've breached your trust. There is a discussion whether that violation is an Isser Deraisa or an Isser Derabanan, because it does sound from the Gemara that Hin Tzedek is a pasuk in the Torah, so it would be a violation of an Isser Deraisa. It would be a Torah violation, but there are those who learn the Gemara a little bit differently and explain that it's not. It's only Midrabanan, because maybe Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rav that the pasuk of Hin Tzedek is telling you that you shouldn't be one in the mouth and one in the heart, and then you have to learn that your Hain, that your yes needs to be a real yes from a different place. So, but that's just technical. I mean, there are nafkaminas, there are practical differences as to whether it's an Isser Deraisa or an Isser Derabanan. One might be as follows. Let's say I agreed to sell you something, the chicken case. I agreed to sell you 10 chickens, and then you leave, and somebody else comes to me, and we have a verbal agreement, somebody else comes to me and says, I'll give you, you know, I'll buy the same chickens from you, but I'll give you the cash right now. Right, so I sell it to him for cash, and then I say, okay, so tomorrow I'll deliver you the chicken. So I have your money, so I would rather sell it to you because I have a guarantee. I have your money already. So in that case, then you come back. Eric comes back to me and says, okay, I want my chickens. I said, sorry, I sold them to that other person for cash. And you say, what do you mean? We had a verbal agreement. So the question is, what's the halacha there? Right. So do I have to give back the money to the second person and give the chickens to Eric because we had a verbal agreement? Or do we say, no, the verbal agreement is not binding. I may breach my trust, but he already gave me money.
The verbal agreement is not binding. Why would you have to, as we say?
Right, okay. So the reason why, now if...
Because you already had a better contact with the other guy already. So the guy gave him the money.
He gave him the money, okay. So
that's a stronger...
Okay, so that's the question. So if I would have given you you gave me the money and I give you the chickens, and you pick up the chickens and do a Kinyan Hagbah, picking up the chickens is an act of transaction, so you're right, they're yours, right? And Eric, sorry, no chickens for you, right? You're out of your chickens because of the verbal agreement is not binding. I'm a Mechusar Amana, I breached my trust, you can't trust me again, but you don't have any chickens because he already did his Kinyan. But the question is, if he doesn't pick it up, and all that was done was that the second buyer gave me money, right? So the halacha is by money, that mos or konos mi deraisa. Now when it comes on a deraisa level, money is an act of transaction. But mi derabanan, the rabbis said that you're not allowed to, that money is not an act of transaction because they were worried that if you give me money, and I'm still holding on to the items that I sold you, and now they're in my storehouse, I might say to you, oh, sorry, you know, you'll pick them up a week when you come to my house, you'll pick up the items that you bought from me. And now your items, your chickens are sitting in my barn. I have your money, and if the money really was an act of transaction, there's a transfer of ownership when you give me the money. The money is mine, and the chickens are yours. So if that's the case, the rabbi said, well, what might happen is there might be a fire in the barn. And if there's a fire in the barn and I don't own the chickens, they're your chickens, there's no reason for me to try to go risk my life and put out the fire to save the chickens. I have my money, and I might say to you, Nisrfu chitecha ba'aliyah, that your chitecha, your wheat, or in this case, your chickens got burned in the barn. Sorry, I got my money, and you have nothing to show for it. So because the rabbis were worried about that, they were worried that Nisrfu chitecha ba'aliyah, that if you don't that if money was enough to transfer the ownership, mm-hmm. that the person who sold the items and ended up with the money would not save the items that were sold, the merchandise, if it was going to be burned. For that reason, the rabbi said that money is not an act of kinyan. Is not an act of kinyan. It's not a transfer of ownership until you do an act of meshicha, of pulling, because I need to be right next to the object, or hagba, which is picking up, which I have to be right next to the object for, or chatzer, which is putting something into my chatzer. I mean, there are certain ways to be koneh that I need to be right there with my merchandise. And this is specifically by metaplin, which is object, movable object, not karka, not land. We're not talking about land. But movable objects, we were worried that if we said that mo's are konos, that money can be kona, that money can acquire, and that would transfer the ownership, then you may have a case of where I say to you, sorry, your merchandise was burned down in the storehouse, and I didn't have to do anything about it because I already had my money. So if that's the case, so then money's not really kona. However, the Mishnah says that anybody who has a transaction that was done with money. You give me money, right, and we haven't finalized the transaction, meaning you didn't yet pick up the merchandise, then if I back out, then I'm given a mishapara. A mishapara, the Mishnah says, mishapara, they say to him, if the person is chozer, meaning if I, the seller, I retract from an agreement that I made to you after you gave me money, you say to him, Misha para me anche dor ha mabul umidor ha flaga, hu asu li para misha ino omed bidiburo. That's the person, Hashem, who repaid the dor ha mabul and the dor ha flaga, he in the future will take repayment from people who don't stand by their word, like you who didn't stand by your word when I gave you the money and now you're retracting on your commitment. So you get a Misha para, right? The Mishapara. So again, you could say, so what?
You get your money back?
Yes.
Okay.
But the seller now has a Mishapara on him, which is a bad thing, right? For that, it's a curse. That Beis Din gives him a curse. Who wants to be cursed by Beis Din, right?
Well, it's similar to what you said before.
It's similar to a Mechusar Amana. So the question now, good. So now the question is, in our case, I agree to sell Eric the chickens, right? And then Evan comes and gives me money. And now Eric comes and says, now give me my chickens. And Evan says, sorry, I bought them with money. So who do I have more of an obligation to? The money or the verbal agreement? So it depends. I only have 10 chickens. How can I be obligated to both?
Okay, let's say you have 100 chickens.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, that's fine.
So when I make the kinyan in the case of the chickens and the fire, am I making a kinyan specifically on these 10 chickens or on chickens in general? So meaning if you have 100
chickens, fine. Right.
Then regardless, you're still required to give me.
That's a good question.
Or it has to be those.
No, they're yours. I can tell you, yours were the ones who burned. Why can't I say that? If money is really the transfer of ownership, so now you have 10 chickens running around in my barn.
Yeah.
Right? So not any 10. There are 10 chickens with your name on it. Right?
Well, we have to specify whether these 10 chickens or 10 chickens in general.
I would imagine
it's part of the
these 10, they're yours already. It can't be 10 in general, they're yours already. You have 10 chickens running around in my barn.
So if I come, you have 1,000 chickens. I want to buy 10 chickens from you.
So I may tell you pick your 10. So I may tell you pick your 10.
Okay.
But if I lose 10, I may tell you those are your 10. No?
You just give them the money back. You'd rather get the money and give them the 10 chickens.
Why do I have to give them the money back?
You got
to
give them the money back?
Midrabanan. Yeah, based on this Misha. Yeah.
You'd rather keep the money.
No, but let's say on the Daraisa level, let's say money was a form of a form of transaction. That money was enough. So now Evan has 10 chickens running around in my barn, right? So are there 10 specific chickens running around in my barn that are his? Or of my 100, 10 of them are his?
But if the transaction is complete, then there are specifically 10 chickens that are his.
That's what I would think, right? If it's the same as putting chickens into your chatzer,
okay.
Right? There's a transfer of ownership. So wouldn't it be 10 of them?
Right. So if something adverse happens to I understand if we specified.
So that would be my claim.
Red ears, you know, whatever it might be. You know, say, whatever it might be, I think it's difficult to say for the seller's point of view that if something adverse happens to those 10, those specifically were the 10 that you bought, you're out of luck.
Right. Well, yeah, from the seller's point, from the buyer's point
of
view.
But then there's a double situation. How are y'all lying? How are y'all dead?
Yeah, right.
You know, you have to specify exactly what it is. If you don't specify, then you can't just say if these are yours.
Well, unless we made a transaction. Let's say, right, let's say like this. You come to my barn and you pick up 10 chickens.
Okay.
Then you put them down, you put them back in my barn.
Okay.
So do you own 10 specific chickens in there, or are there 10 of those 100 are yours?
No, I would say 10 chickens are chickens.
So why should this be different?
Because
if,
it's different.
Again, if money
yeah.
acquires the same way picking up does. It doesn't, right? We're passing that it doesn't. But if it were to, so then why would it work differently than picking up chickens? Right? If the Maisa Kinyan is an actual transfer of ownership, where after this Maisa Kinyan is done, the object goes from my ownership to your ownership, so why shouldn't there be 10 chickens standing on your side of the line?
Those chickens gave birth, and there's 11 chickens.
Should be, right. Now again, how could you make the claim, right? How would you claim, now one of my chickens, one of my 100, or one of my 90, and your 10 have baby, you're going to say it's yours, I'm going to say it's mine.
Right.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You only know when it depends on your 10 chickens. If you actually go and specify it, because if you want to identify the chickens that are mine, you either give them to me or I get to pick them, or you specify your 10 oldest chickens or your 10 youngest chickens.
If you make some type of stipulation, so then, yeah, of course.
Otherwise, it's just 10 chickens. And I will decide when my time is right that I will reserve the right to pick them.
That's because you're the buyer. If I'm the seller, I'm not going to give you that ability.
So would you pick my chickens?
I don't know.
You're going to pick your 10 dead chickens? I mean, I want 10 living chickens.
I'll give you 10 living chickens.
10 living chickens. So if they all burn in a fire, then those aren't the ones I'm going to get. I want 10.
So good. So you'll make a condition in your contract, in your agreement with me, that you're going to make sure you come over there and pick out your 10 chickens.
I'm going to pick out my 10 chickens.
Fine.
If you get to pick them out, you'll give me your 10 worst chickens. So why would I let you go pick them out?
Right. No, hey, right.
Best chickens.
Right. But why would right. Why would I let you do that?
Not 10 worst chickens. Somewhere in the middle.
Right. They don't want me for chicken.
Have some cake. You eat dinner yet? Usually you don't get to eat dinner before. Yeah. So anyway, so that is the question. I saw this question raised. If you make a verbal agreement to one person and then you accept money from the other person, who do you have more of an obligation to give to? So it might depend on whether breaching the trust of the breach of trust that is by breaking a verbal agreement is a violation of a Torah prohibition or a rabbinic prohibition. If it's a Torah prohibition, so that might be more significant to breach that level of trust. Hin Tzedek of an Issa Daraisa might be worse than getting a Misha Para, which is the effect of retracting from a sale after accepting money. But if it's only Midrabbanan, so then maybe the Misha Para is worse. That's a discussion. There is a whole discussion, this will end, but there is a whole discussion about whether if the price changes, if we agree to something, a verbal agreement, and then the price changes. Right, let's say the price jumps up, right, a significant or not significant amount, rather than would we still say, well, a verbal agreement, you can't breach a verbal agreement, your word is your word, or do we say, no, if it changes, so you can say, I never intended right, to sell it to you if it would have changed, so then my word was my word when it was that price, but my word's not my right word after the price changes. So that's a whole discussion. There the Rama quotes two opinions about it. He thinks that you have to be machmir, but many of the Acharim were mekel. Many were lenient in that question. Chacham Sofer or HaShulchan were lenient in that situation. And then the other question, which is also an interesting question, is not if that market value changes, but let's say somebody gives you a better offer. Right? The first question is if the market value changes. The second question is, even if the market value remains the same, but somebody comes and says, I'll give you an extra $100, would that be, can I make the same claim? What?
You can think from the flip side. The market value.
Well, it might be the same thing. Or you could say that this is not the same thing, because if the market value changes, so then I can imagine why I would have the claim of I didn't have intentions of selling it to you when if the price would were to change, right? But maybe if the price doesn't change, but somebody gives me a better offer, I still have to honor my agreed upon price because the price didn't change. I lose a little bit of my claim.
The value of the object is still worth the same. It's just that someone's willing to pay more for it, but the market value is still the same.
Right, and therefore maybe I would have more of an obligation to keep my word. Maybe it'd be different. You like, there's two opinions. It's a machlokes, whether...
At the end of the day, you're still looking to have...
You're willing to pay more,
willing to pay more, right?
Does it make a difference in the market value or something?
It might. Yeah, there is one tshuva that I saw...
You assume a certain fluctuation, but if it's excessive... Then
right, there is a tshuva that I saw that if it's a great change, that everybody would agree that you can break your word, and that wouldn't be a violation of this, or to breach of trust if it's a great change.
So, bottom line is everything right.
Definitely. The bottom line is make kinyanim. Make a real kinyan. Don't rely on a verbal agreement because a verbal agreement is not a binding, it's not a transaction. It's binding to the degree that people need to keep their words because, our religion is based on that Hashem is Emes, the Chosam Roshal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, that the signet ring of Hashem is Emes, and therefore we need to go in His ways of act as a truthful and trustworthy people, so we need to stand by our words. But that doesn't mean that after I give you my word that a transaction has been made and there's been no transfer of ownership yet. So yeah, you should try to make sure that things are in writing and that things are, when you're making a transaction, you should actually make a formal act of transaction without the verbal agreement. Because the verbal agreement, again, if a person should not breach his verbal agreements because it's mechusar amana, which is a pretty significant thing, to be called somebody who is non-trustworthy person. But nevertheless, it's not binding enough that if a person backs out of it, that it would be able to force him to get back into it, or that the transaction was actually made. Yeah, not much. Again, not for purposes of psak, just for purposes of learning the forgiveness.